Okay, so I think in our, this is our fifth shiur, I believe, in Mor Nevuchim. And I believe in our last shiur, we spoke about a few things. Well, we mentioned the Rambam's use of Dibur Torah, Kaloshim Bnei Adam, right, and how he sort of flips on his head. I think I mentioned it, but I just want to stress, the Rambam is certainly not the only one who invokes that term of Dibur Torah, Kaloshim Bnei Adam, both before him and after him. The Rambam does use it in several places, but he's certainly not the only one who believes in such a notion of interpreting the Torah in this manner and invoking that phrase, even as much as it's a little bit awkward for our context. And you recall as well that the Rambam focuses in on the use of Unkelus. Unkelus is very important for him, right? The Unkelus says, of course, Chalila, right? His interpretation of Unkelus, right? That we never have anthropomorphisms, right? In fact, always the contrary. Now, in 131 to 136, I think you can think of this as a unit, okay? The Rambam gets into here, and it seems at first it feels a little bit like a sort of a tangent, but it's actually not. The Rambam gets into what is it, you know, he defined human beings. Remember 1:1. What is the nature of a human being based on his interpretation of Etzem Elokim? What is it? What's the essential attribute of a human being? Sorry?
Neshama.
No, not neshama. Intellect. Whether the singer is saying, but the seichel is important here, right? His intellect is important here, okay? And now in 131, the Rambam. Again, it's a Hasidic for me, you know what I'm saying? The question is, the use of the terms here is interesting, but I think intellect is seicha is really the term.
Maral also seems to talk about it's more intellect than rather than nefesh as well.
The question is also how you define each of those terms as well. Okay, but in any case, I know you're not doing this, I'm saying, but never conflate various, you know, opinions between the Maral and the Rambam and anyone else. And as each person has to be understood in its own, in their own terms. So that's why it's very important. That's why, in fact, we're studying each book on its own for that reason, just to avoid that. Even though, of course, you want to make cross comparisons, but just mentioning as an aside. Okay. So having established in 1:1, right, the phenomena of what it means to be a human being, the Rambam then goes on for a whole bunch of chapters and talks about how to interpret the Torah properly. And by the way, we skipped over, but there's many interesting things here. In 1:8, he talks about what the term makom means. Right, that's a shame Hashem, the makom. It's very problematic in some ways. 1:10, he talks about going up and there is God descending. Okay. And now in 131, he sort of comes back to this theme of human intellects. Okay. And basically tells us as follows. There are great differences in capacity between the individuals of the species. This also manifests very clearly in the matter of knowledge, right? There's a very different intellectual capacities of different people. It's a fact. It's establishing. Some people are very smart. Some people can pick things up quickly. Some people take some time, but they can pick it up. And some people just aren't that smart. And then below that, okay? And the Rambam says this from the get-go. We should understand that this is the case. Okay? Now, because people have different intellects, and this is one of the reasons, right? Even amongst smart people, but certainly amongst others as well, there can be disagreements between people about how to understand things. And he quotes Alexander here on the bottom of page 66 in the Venus version here, right, in 131. Alexander Aphrodisius, okay, says that there are three causes of disagreement about things. One of them is love of dominion, love of strife. Okay, or is that turns because people want power. So people turn away from truth, or it's argument for the sake of power. The second is because things are sometimes difficult, they're subtle and obscure. The third is some people aren't that smart and therefore misunderstand and fight about it. Okay? And then the Rambam adds to Alexander's and says there's a fourth reason why there's disagreement, and that's because sometimes people believe things simply out of habit and upbringing. Okay? Habit and upbringing for the Rambam is a fourth reason. For man has his nature, love of, and inclination for that which is habituated. People are very habituated to things. Right? Thus you can see that the people of the desert dislike the towns, do not hanker after their pleasures, etc. Even though, right, he's a very sort of derogatory perspective of them. They have a lack of pleasures, they have a scarcity of food, because people like what they're used to. In a similar way, man has love for and a wish for to defend opinions to which he's habituated and in which he's been brought up and has a feeling of repulsion for opinions other than those. This is very true in general, by the way. I think it's true. Oh. For this reason, also man is blind to the apprehension of the true realities and inclines towards the things to which he is habituated. Now, why is he telling us this? Because this happened to the multitude with regard to the belief in his corporeality. And, now he adds, many other metaphysical subjects, as we shall make clear. Okay? In other words, what the Rambam is trying to tell us is as follows. Okay? One of the reasons why people believe in God's corporeality is simply because of what they are taught. Okay, now that's very interesting, because well, what's the Rambam already starting to set up here? He could have told us the reason is because it's obscure. No, that's true. I'm saying because it's obscure. Right? Remember Alexander's things. Because it's obscure and difficult and subtle. Right? Or because they're so ignoramuses and therefore they can't understand it. But the Rambam doesn't say that. Okay, let's see, keep it going on. It's going to be important momentarily.
I'm confused by his logic here because you could say the same for people who were brought up not to think in corporeality. People who were brought up to think that God doesn't have corporeality, you could say that they were also habituated to think
Pasha,
that.
Pasha. There's no doubt. The Rambam is making a very interesting klal here, right? He's just saying, listen, many leaders, Bali Musa, called the Girsa Diyan Kuto, right? There's that which we're taught. You get that from themselves, saying, but the Girsa Diyan Kuto, I'm saying, is that which people are taught as children. Right? It sticks with people for a very long time. And it's partly because of habit, habituation. It's partly because there's a sentimentalism, I think, is driving at here and saying that people like that which they're used to and that which they grew up with. Okay? Now, Eitan's point is correct. I mean, you could say, the whole reason why you, Rambam, believe is because you grew up in a certain society. And therefore you believe in X, Y, and Z, or in this case, a guy doesn't have a body. Okay. There is, by the way, it's not speculative, meaning this is exactly what people said about the Rambam. The Rambam, the reason why you believe all this apikorsis is because what? You grew up amongst Muslims who were very influenced by this Greek philosophy, and therefore you've incorporated it to it.
So they use it against him?
I'm sorry? They didn't quote him for 131, I'm saying, but as a general rule, and it's the same argument can always be made against people, right?
And you can't defend it. It's like you're in it.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Now, we'll come back to this because it gets back to this, but I want to just read an interesting passage, very end of 131. This is very interesting. Do not think that what we've said with regard to the insufficiency of the human intellect and its having a limit at which it stops is a statement made in order to conform to law. For it is something that has already been said and truly grasped by the philosophers without their having concern for a particular doctrine or opinion. And it is a true thing that cannot be doubted except by an individual ignorant of what has already been demonstrated. In other words, what he says here is, listen, I want you to know that what I'm telling you right now, that people have limited intellects, I'm not saying this because the Torah has told me this. This is something that everyone knows to be true. Okay? I think keep in the back of mind, why does he add this here? It's an interesting question. Why does he throw this in here? Why is that necessary to stress? Hold the thought. Gins, what do you think?
Because his whole idea is risen is because the way we're connected to Kodesh Baruch Hu and like him is through Seichel. So he doesn't want to bash on the Seichel too much, or that hurts his own Raya.
He doesn't want to backtrack at all. Okay, now. What is very interesting here is the Rambam doesn't apologize for this fact at all. There's no apologetics. Now, it's very interesting. One of the things you could always ask is, in the Rambam's philosophy, we'll see this as we go along, but isn't this not fair? It's just not fair. This reality is mamish not fair. Some of them are born with certain seichel, some are not. And the ultimate achievement, purpose of what it means to be human is this intellectual comprehension, then some people are just born with a much greater advantage than others. Rabbi, isn't that not fair? And I think the Rambam's answer to that is, I don't care. Well, we'll see coming up why I'm going to stress this. But I'm just pointing out, the Rambam isn't bothered by this phenomenon. Meaning, if a person says, ah, what does it mean? We'll see, the Rambam is complex here, but what does it mean to be, get into Olam Haba? What does it mean?
You work your best.
Do your best, right? You do mitzvos. You do everything you can given your conditions. No! No, my friends, that is not the case. Ah, so the Rambam's son has an advantage over my son? Okay, well, sorry for your son. Huh? Well, before Misnagdish, just saying there is. Don't call the Rambam Misnagdish. I mean, Misnagdish will love that. I'm saying, it's elitist. It's elitist. The Rambam's got no problem with being elitist, as we'll see coming up now. Now, this is interesting. Now, in 132, the Rambam establishes here and says as follows. Listen, you should know it's very, very important to only study that which you are capable of understanding and apprehending. Because once you go beyond that, you'll get all messed up. Okay? And this, by the way, is how he interprets the story of Arba Shenichlas Tepardes. Right? Rabbi Akiva, why did he come out in B'Shalom? Right? Because he knew exactly what he could aspire to apprehend and what he shouldn't aspire to apprehend. As opposed to, of course, the great sinner. Who's the great sinner in the story of Arba Shenichlas, right? Acher, is known as? Right? What was his problem? I mean, what was his grand sin? Is that he tried to study matters beyond human comprehension, or certainly his comprehension. Now, by the way, and this relates to some of the themes we're talking about, when you start interpreting Arba Shenichlas Tepardes into an analogy for philosophical contemplation, what are you doing? You're sticking it to the mystics. Right? Because everyone in the world of mysticism, right, and all the stories that we have, so before the Rambam and after the Rambam, really shocked of the Sugya and Chagiga, and certainly when it appears in similar stories in the Heichalos literature, is that we're talking about mystical experiences. No, says the Rambam. Right? And he doesn't tell you, by the way, I know there are a bunch of mystics out there who think what? This is a mystical story. But in truth, he just tells you this was a philosophical story, and this was a story, because Chazal were philosophers and rationalists, and this was a story about the dangers of trying to comprehend more than you're able to apprehend. Okay, now.
Does he ever relate to the weakness of that idea of historically?
No, of course not.
Right.
Pashatel. Right. I could be bad that he's genuine here. I mean, I think he's genuine. It's not clear to me that he's just trying to subvert, some sort of agenda. Not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The effect is a subversion. I'm not sure that's the intent. That's an important distinction. Okay, now, in 333, he gets in the following. Okay, it behooves rather to educate the young and to give firmness to the deficient capacity according to the measure of their apprehension. In other words, you got to start off by doing what? You teach people based upon certainly the young, based on what they can understand. Thus, he who seems to be perfect in mind to be formed from that high rank should be elevated step by step. Right? Those who are capable, they should be revealed to them what? Step by step, in the proper educational pedagogical order. And he's going to tell us what that is momentarily. Right? They should be taught the secrets. But everyone else, right, and who are the everyone else? The young, the woman, and all the people to begin with and to learn. The Rambam's not a big feminist, by the way. Just in general. Let's see this coming up. But those people, right? No. They cannot be learn these things. But they need to know it. Meaning they need to believe in it. So what does the Rambam say? Hence they are confined to accepting tradition with regard to all sound opinions. Right? What does that mean? What does that mean? There are some people in life who are very smart and therefore can be taught Maisim Merkava, step by step, and understand the secrets, meaning they'll have knowledge of it. We'll see this in 150, that distinction. They'll have knowledge and really understand. And there are other people who are simply just taught what to believe. There is a theory out there, and I don't think it's crazy, I may have mentioned this before, that the whole purpose of the Rambam writing the Yugim Lekarim, which is not a very philosophical text, right, was precisely to provide that for everyone. For everyone out there to know, this is what one needs to affirm. Ah, I don't really understand God's unity. Ah, I don't really understand, uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Said it. But at least you should know what that which you're supposed to believe in.
What's the value in just believing in the Rambam when it's crossed there?
There are values to believing in things, and we'll have to see this coming up, why that is. That's a good, very important question. But for the Rambam, we'll get to that, okay? One second. But it's important for the Rambam to say that, listen, there are just things in life out there that the masses won't get, and that's just the way it is. So tell them what to believe, but don't teach them philosophical knowledge here, because they ain't going to get it.
It's interesting that his critique earlier, people who believe in the corporeality of God because they were taught it from a young age, his critique there isn't that they were brainwashed or that they were taught it from a young age without understanding, it's that they were taught the wrong thing. But the method of teaching them is something that he's not disagreeing with, because he's saying that the same method that was applied to teach people about the corporeality of God should be used to teach people instead about how...
Hold on here, because this is a come back to this, exactly. Okay, and corporeality of God is very interesting here. Your point, I understand, is saying that something is just simply taught to people. Yes, he believes in that. To certain people. Right? Okay, now, why is it so hard to understand all these grand things? So he tells you in 134, and this is 131 to 136 is clearly a unit. This is writing in order here. And he says, listen, there are five things that prevent the study of the divine science. First, there's a difficulty settling the obscurity of the matter. Okay? That we understand. It's difficult. Second, insufficiency of the minds of all men at their beginnings. For man is not granted his ultimate perfection at the outset. For perfection exists in him only potentially. And sometimes it remains in its defective state. In other words, people just simply cannot get that far. Third, the length of the preliminaries. What does he mean by length of preliminaries? The Rambam means as follows. For man has in his nature a desire to seek the ends, and he often finds preliminaries tedious and refuses to engage in them. What's the Rambam asserting here?
You can't jump with philosophy.
That's right. You can't skip the stages. Okay. And so basically happens is as follows. People want to understand all these grand secrets of the Torah. And what do they end up doing? They skip out on the math, on the astronomy, on the natural sciences, on all sorts of other things which you have to learn. By the way, in other words, I'm not really interested in getting into this whole debate, but there's so many statements here where the Rama makes very clear. If you want to get to Olam Haba, you just need to know like all the wisdoms of the world, so to speak. I mean, I'm not interested in having a whole Torah Mada discussion, or it might be. But like, I guess this is one of the reasons why people don't learn the Morning Vulchim. So statements like this. In other words, it's like, anyway, back to our regular scheduled program, okay? And then it tells you what the order of the studies should be. First, you have to learn logic. Then you have to learn math. Then you have to learn sciences. And only then, the divine sciences. Okay? Now, accordingly, if we never in any way acquire an opinion through following traditional authority, we're not correctly conducted towards something by means of parables, but we're obliged to achieve a perfect representation by means of essential definitions, this state of affairs will lead to all people denying without having known whether there is a deity for the world. What's he saying here? This process is very difficult. This is not easy. And therefore, we need people to initially acquire opinions through traditional authority. Because until you get to that point, people are going to be like, I don't know, I haven't got through the whole steps yet. So what, you go through your 40 to decide if you believe in God, according to traditional perspective? That's crazy. Whereas the Rambam is not against teaching people opinions based on traditional authority. He's just saying that the ultimate is to achieve it through knowledge, and that's a long process. And you got to get there for those who can't. The fourth is that in order to really, really, really be able to achieve intellectual comprehension, you need to have moral virtues. Okay? This, by the way, is very important. Because, see, you can have a lot of geniuses out there, right? And they might be brilliant, But the Rambam believes on a fundamental level that if people don't have the proper midot, they're never going to be able to achieve the great knowledge that's necessary. In other words, he thinks that knowledge only comes by certain temperaments, by certain virtues. It's a necessary precondition. Moral training needs to exist in order for people to raise their intellects. Yeah.
So seemingly it's not just intellect. It's intellect in line with how you act.
Oh, pasha. Yeah.
So it doesn't mean you have to, you're going to be the greatest if you just have intellect. You can have not so much intellect, but then have a lot of morals and then be greater than someone else.
It could be, 100%. But again, it depends what you're looking to be greater than and what you're measuring here. Meaning, the Rambam, and this is why I want to stress here, is that the Rambam is not one of these, like, I don't know if anyone like this really exists, but sort of this ivory tower intellectual who thinks that everything is the intellect and that's it. Not at all. Right? There's Hilchodea for a reason, but it's not just that there's Hilchodea because it's also good to be a good person. And we're going to see this later on. Rambam thinks one of the purposes of the Torah is to make people deos. But ultimately, all of these good deos, deo here meaning virtues, right? Rambam, that's what the translation of deus is. Deus is virtues. All of these good virtues are meant for what? Ultimately, I mean, they are valuable in its own right, but are also meant as a precondition for the intellectual apprehension. Okay? Now, this is important. Now, so Ginz is saying, well, what person is great midot, but they're not that smart? I mean, the Rambam, again, is in favor of that. What he's saying, but in terms of getting to the highest ladders, you're not going to get there. Now, you're not going to get there either if you have the raw skills, but if bad midot.
Why should that be?
So he tells us as follows. It is impossible to achieve true rational acts unless it be by a man thoroughly trained with respect to his morals and endowed with the qualities of tranquility and quiet. There are, moreover, many people who have received from their first natural disposition a complexion of temperament, right? And they get angry, and they get hot, and they become rash. Perfection can never be perceived in such people. And to make an effort for the benefit is pure ignorance, it never can happen. It is accordingly indubitable that preparatory moral training should be carried out before beginning with this science, so that man should be in a state of extreme uprightness and perfection. Okay, now, it seems that part of this is that proper midot is having the proper balance. Whereas if you learn Hilchodei, you see the Rambam is all about balance, right? So part of that is so that way people are able to comprehend. Whereas you have to be a certain type of mental state to be able to focus, concentrate properly. That's part of it. But I think part of it's also, he thinks it's just certain types of people. Only certain types of people who have the proper midot are going to be able to achieve intellectual knowledge of something so sublime. Okay. And then he gets to the fifth element. And the fifth element is found that people sometimes get occupied with the necessities of the bodies. This is a terrible mistake. What does this mean? I'm at the end of 134 now. I'm at page 79 in the penis version. Can someone open the window here? I just want to get a little air. Right? It says as follows. People get occupied with taking care of their bodies, with the wife and the children, and the superfluities of life, which then becomes a bad conduct of life and habits, etc., etc. Now, what's the Rambam talking about here?
Just don't have time for it because
they're too busy. Right, people are just too busy with all sorts of other physical, right, needs that they don't focus on their intellect. Now, again, the Rambam is a real big believer that physicality is just one of those things which we have to take seriously, but it is just the tough out. I mean, it's really the tough of the. That's totally right. It means, and remember the Rambam said, is that people will get caught up. The what are human beings? Human beings, the form of human beings is the intellect. The matter is what? The physicality. And sensuality, ultimately, for the Rambam, is something which leads people astray. And we've seen it already beforehand. We saw one in the introduction, and we see it throughout. The Rambam is just not a big believer in sensuality. Like, the Rambam would hate the Food Channel. Hey, the Food Channel. Okay, now, here's we get to the upshot, 135. Now things get exciting. Because having told us all these things, you might say, so what is it about these people who believe in corporality of God? Nebuch, what can you do? They don't have such a good intellect. Right? Whatever, it'd be okay, so let's forgive them. No. Do not think that although we have laid down the preceding chapters regarding the greatness and the hidden nature of the matter, right? It refers also to the deny of the corporality of God and to deny of his being subject to affections. It is not so. For just as it behooves to bring up children in the belief and to proclaim to the multitude that God may be ignited and honored is one and that none of them ought to be worshipped, so it behooves that they should be made to accept on traditional authority the belief that God is not a body. In other words, we need to be tell people straight up, right, that God is simply not a body. He's not like anything else. That the differences between man and God is not a little bit more and less, but that's an entirely different kind. It's a different species. It's a different entity. Okay? And this is something which can be taught to people in a clear manner, that God doesn't have a body, and they can understand that. They need to be able to affirm that. And it's very interesting. I want you to know, he says, when it comes to my theory of negative attributes, which we're going to see starting on 150, or my understanding of creation, or prophecy, or all sorts of other things, right? Those are things which are hard for people to understand and for them to be taught. But not so with regard to the corporeality of God. It is teachable, and it's necessary to be taught. Now, why is this so? Why is the Rambam so emphatic about this? And here he tells us basically at the end of 135 the following. The negation of the doctrine of corporeality of God and denial, on page 81 in the penis, top of the page, third line. On the other hand, the negation of the doctrine of the corporeality of God and denial of his having likeness to create things and of his subject ought to make clear and explain to everyone according to his passing and inculcated in virtue of traditional authority upon children, women, stupid ones, and those of a defective natural disposition. Just as you teach people God's the only one to worship, so too you teach people God doesn't have a body. For there is no profession of unity unless the doctrine of God's corporeality is denied. Why is that so important? Well, he explains it. Why is that? For a body cannot be one, but it's composed of matter and form, which by Ibn Nefesh are two. It is also divisible, subject to partition. Right? In other words, when you believe that God has a body, what are you basically saying? God's divisible. If you're saying God's divisible, then in effect, what's going on? You just don't believe in God. Okay, and this is what's so important for the Rambam. When a person thinks that God has a body, they quite simply just do not believe in God. They think they believe in God, but they don't. In other words, the whole concept that you're telling people, remember, even based on traditional authority, yes, God exists. Well, what is God? At the very basis, what is God? God is a different type of entity which does not have a body. And if you think God has a body, then what are you essentially doing? You're just not believing in God. Okay? So the concept that you have is in fact something else entirely. Now, who's better? Based on this, you can understand. Who's better, the idolater or the person who thinks that God has a body? So in 136, the Rambam tells us, the idolater is very bad, and that's why the term wrath of God is always used exclusively with that term. But I want you to know that the Ovid Avodah Zarah believes in God. Just what? But he's using it, right, as an intermediary. Like saying, "Machnis Yerachamim." No, that's a different shir, right? Say it, right? He's using him as an intermediary, the Avodah Zarah. Yeah? And therefore, right, that's the nature of Avodah Zarah. You believe in God, but what? You use others as intermediary. Okay? But believing that God is a body is worse, because you just simply do not believe in God. You think so. But you're just using the term. You're using the word God. But that's not actually God. And the Rambam's emphatic about this. And this is where I want to focus for a moment here. At the end of 136, he tells us as follows. If, I'm on the bottom page number 84, top page 85 in the Penis edition. If, however, it should occur to you that the one who believes in the corporeality of God should be excused. Now here's it. Maybe say, listen. You're right, the guy doesn't believe in God. Oh, give him a break. He was raised in a certain household. Right? Yeah, right. It's a tinak shenishba and the sense of corporeality, and oh, maybe just went to too many Tanakh classes. Right? So he says, maybe he should be excused because of his having been brought up in this doctrine, or because of his ignorance and the shortcomings of apprehension. You ought to have a similar belief with regard to an idolater, for only he worships idols because of ignorance of the fathers of the bricker. Right? They continue in the custom of their fathers. Okay? And look what he says. If, however, you should say that the external sense of a biblical text, maybe this is a reason. But he says, no! There is no excuse for one who does not accept the authority of men who inquire into the truth and are engaged in speculation. It's wrong of him. He should have just gone to a smart philosopher and told him, us, that what? God doesn't have a body. And he says here very clearly, it's not, the issue isn't here that he can't prove it. Meaning, if a person says, I know God doesn't have a body, I believe God doesn't have a body, but I just can't prove it, that's okay. Ram doesn't hold you accountable for that. But if, right, you're so stupid to believe that God has a body, why are you so stupid? Why is it so bad? What are you going to do? This is where I grew up. This is my intellect. This is why I read the Torah. No, you're an Epicurus. You're a Kofar, there's no excuse for it. You should have read the Rambam's Mishnah Torah. Or just gone to your local, call the local philosopher hotline. There's no excuse. And you're Epicurus and don't have a Chelek Olam Haba. Now, if you recall, and we saw this a little bit last week, or the previous week, I don't remember now, take a look at sheets here. The Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva, Paragiv Halacha Zayin, tells us, right, that person in the list of the Minim lists people who are what? Believe that Shiesham Ribon Achad Avashu Guf Baal Tmuna. Alef Yud Hashit. So the Rambam tells us, and he, remember, and he tells us this also in Hilchot Tshuva, and he tells us in the Yukim Lekarim, he tells us in Yisori HaTorah, Halacha Tet, and now in Gimel, in Hilchot Tshuva, he tells us the person's Amin. And the Rambam, the Raavi goes to town on him. What's the Raavi go to town on him for? He says, listen, Agaratot Mishamshot Adadeot. Right? There are certain agaratot that may confuse the person. You can't call this guy. And then, of course, he says, they're gdolim toivim men, and they're greater people than you who actually believe in God's corporeality. We saw that last week. And by the way, the Rambam of 146 tells us, don't think that Chazal believe in this as well. There's no havamin in Chazal to believe in God's corporeality. Not a pleasure, but that was the Rambam's belief. Okay? I think I mentioned to you, I'm not sure if I mentioned to you this, but the Riyadz, right, of Yishayo Mitrani, the grandson, right, and there's the younger, the grandson, not the Riyaz, the Riyaz. I'm being confused. The grandson, yeah, the grandson. So he says that one of the reasons why, and this is a parish to the Sanhedrin, one of the reasons why there are people who believe in God's corporeality who are wrong is because a few of Chazal also believe in God's corporeality. In any case, Raiva basically says that these agadot are confusing. People are confused. And they're not apikorsa. Now, if you take a look in the Sefer Yikara, what happens to a person who believes in... Who's Sefer Yikara, by the way? Who's the Baal Sefer Yikara? Huh? No. Baal Sefer Yikara is of Yosef Albo. Okay? And he's writing early 15th century. And he says as follows. He denies God's corporeality. I mean, Maimer Aleph Perek Bet. Vulam, Davar Shi Yitzar Mitzitor, it's a Seicha Fishi Yifshar Mitzitor, it's a Teva. Right? Rui Muchav Lamin. There are certain things which are logical, but are, there is a logical comprehensive. This is very interesting. You could say as follows. What's the difference between believing Tchiyat HaMeitim and believing God has a body? God has a body. Maybe these are just things that are told to us in the Torah. So he says as follows. Tchiyat HaMeitim is something which is unnatural. It's against the Teva, but it's comprehensible. God having a body is what? Unintelligent. It's incomprehensible. And therefore, right, you must read the Torah in a different way, not kipshuto. And this is how Unkelus did it, and the whole reason is Dibur Torah Kalashim Bnei Adam. He says it right here, okay? And then he says as follows, and I guess it's this whole thing. He goes and explains, this is how to understand the opening of Bilam's Aton, right, the donkey's mouth. And he says, there are those who believe in all sorts of things. But some people interpret the Torah in a manner which is not logical, but they read the Torah kipshatan. He's not excluded from the believers in the Torah. Velo utala saper benu Torah katoma galat ponim b'Torah, etc. And can't call him a koifer. And he says, this is what the Rambam claimed, and the writer went to town on him on this. You cannot call such a person a mean. Why not? Bottom part. Zed yach yom mitiv v'nochom mashi l'msal rabbeinu rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, chutz me'Elisha acher shiyodeh bo mitchave limrod bo. Why is it that Elisha ben Avuya could not come back? It's because he intended to rebel. If a person knows the truth but denies it out of rebellion, those people can't do truth. If a person has no intent to rebel, or to depart from the ways of truth, he just intends to interpret the Torah as he understands it. Afa pishi farashotam bechalofa met eino min velofa kofer chalila. So this is the category of what you may call kfira b'shogeg. And I mean kfira b'shogeg, a kofer b'shogeg. A person who accidentally believes in kfira, not out of mezid, not because of upbringing, even he's talking about here, because they're interpreting the Torah. It's not onus. So it's an onus. Shogeg. They thought what they're doing is right, and that's wrong. But those people cannot be called an apikoros. Because to be an apikoros, what do you need? Intent to rebel. The Tashbetz in O of Mishpat similarly says, you want to know that one who has properly accepted the roots of the Torah, but has moved to deviate them from depth of speculation, and who thereby believes concerning one of the branches of the faith the opposite wasn't accepted, as what one ought to believe, and tries to explain the verses of Scripture according to his belief, even though he errs, he is no denier. What's a denier? Koifer. For he was not brought to his deviation by heresy at all, and he found the traditions right. He only holds that belief because he thinks as intention of the Torah. So both the Tashbetz and Rav Yosef Albo, and possibly the Rabbi, not clearly that's what the Rabbi is meaning to say, but possibly the Rabbi here, says a person who, out of attempt to understand the Torah properly, misunderstands the Torah is not a kofer.
Do you have to specifically have proofs within Chazal to back you up?
Well, you definitely have to have some basis. Meaning, let's say someone just decides and says, I think the Torah teaches us that there are like five Godheads. But there's no basing that claim on anything. They just say it. That's one thing. But if a person says, listen, I think proper theology means X, Y, and Z. What's the nature of Ashkocha Pratit? It's a massive machloket between the Rishonim about wide range from people pretty deterministic to people more or less think that God created the world and walked away. Fully walked away. Hopefully we'll see this over the course of the year. These people all quote Psukim, they all quote Chazal, all sorts of phenomena. And they have a very, very different understanding of the nature of God's intervention in this world. So one of them's got to be Koifer. So the Tashbetz and Rav Yosef Albo simply say, there's okay. Not that's okay, I'm saying, but okay that this guy is bad, that this guy believes the wrong thing, but it doesn't make him a kofer. And the Rambam doesn't care. And the Rambam is very emphatic. I don't care. Don't give me no excuses about your background. Don't give me any excuses about your psukim. Don't give me any excuses about your intellect, nothing. Kofer is a kofer. Why is he so strong on this? So I think here the Abravanel, right, has the right approach. Abravanel says this in the Rosh Amana. Rosh Amana, again, is what is very important for the philosophical works, where he gets into all sorts of things related to the Karei Emuna, although he's not into Karei Emuna. Okay. We'll discuss this another time. But he says as follows. Now, this is very interesting. If you take the logic of Rav Yosef Albo to its final conclusion, what might you get? What might you conclude?
Religions.
Huh?
Different religions.
They're just Christians. Right? At some point, where do you draw the line? Listen, they just interpreted the Torah. It means something different. So they're not meaning, but those are the meaning. But upon examination, this position may seem to be clearly false. For according to it, even one who unintentionally denies every principle will acquire a portion of the world to come. Thus, the belief of the Christians who took the words of Torah and prophecy literally and believe their meaning to be as they understood it would not deprive them of the true felicity, and one may not say that they are heretics and sectarians. It will be possible, according to this, to find a man who does not believe in any of the principles and who yet not should be called sectarian or heretic, right? A mean or a koifer. Rapikoros, I'm not sure she has here. If you're brought to this blind foolishness by his failure to understand the meaning of the Torah, these things are intolerable, to say such a thing, according to both the faith of the Torah and logic. For a false doctrine about any one of the principles of faith turns the soul from its true felicity and will not bring one to the life in the world to come, even if the opinion is held without intention to rebel. It is like poison which consumes the spirit of him, even if he ate it thinking that it was good and healthy food. If you eat something and you think this is healthy, and all of a sudden what? It's poison and kills you. It wasn't my fault. You're right, but you're dead. And it's the same thing. Similarly, heresy and false beliefs in the matter of principles of religion will expel the soul of man without doubt, making it possible for him to inherit the world to come. Well, what's the yisod of this machloket? So I think part of this, more than this, but this part of this relates on a fundamental level of what you understand Neishim Olam Haba is. The Rambam tells us Neishim Olam Haba is a world of perfect intellectual apprehension, which a person achieves based on what they've achieved in the world. So it could be that you didn't intend to have the wrong ideas, but you didn't get it in the end. Meaning you can have someone who has the best intent of the world, and best intent in the world, in order to make it to the finish line of something. Okay? But various factors come up, and he got tricked, and was told to go one way, and in fact, he's supposed to go the other way. And he doesn't make it. But someone tricked him, and people were not nice to him along the way, and he made an innocent mistake, and he read the map wrong. Sorry. You didn't make it. And the Rambam feels the same way as well with regard to Olam Haba. It seems, by the way, that others don't feel this way because they feel that part and parcel of what it means to be someone who is worthy of not making it to Olam Haba is what? The intent. It's like a punishment. The Rambam has a very naturalistic, if you will, understanding of this to say, it doesn't matter what your intent was, it just means what did you get to in the end. Very unforgiving, the Rambam is in this regard. And his point is to say that if I can be unforgiving in other realms, but there I'm unforgiving in the result, but I understand why a person doesn't understand the nature of prophecy. I don't understand, the Rambam says, why a person doesn't understand that God can't have a body. And so it's a very important yisod in the Rambam, and it's really just unforgiving manner unforgiving manner in the sense of simply stating, right, I don't care what's led you astray. Ultimately, you have to get the answers right in order to get Olam Haba. And by the way, and particularly in this realm, you just have no excuse. Questions?
The Abarbanel really sides with the Rambam. Like, what's the nafkamina between what the Abarbanel is saying with the Rambam?
I think the Rambam, yeah, he's already saying it's threatening. Now, it's interesting. What would the Rav Yosef Albo or the Tashbit, and Pasuk the Ravid, say in response to Rav Yosef Albo? In other words, the Abarbanel is a very boring claim. It's sort of reductio ad absurdum. He's basically saying, if anyone just misreads the Torah, right, then they can believe anything they want and not be an apikoros.
I'm sure they'd have a certain red line.
The Tashbetz has what? A red line. Tashbetz has a red line.
Yeah, what's his red line?
He says, someone who is not... He says, if he found a tradition from the sages to the effect that he ought to turn from that position he adopted, he would do so. So presumably they'd hold that you'd have to be able to justify it within Chazal, and if you find that it's unjustifiable within Chazal...
You
struggle to justify Christianity within Chazal, I think.
Well, at least in the Psukim you wouldn't.
No, okay.
I'm not saying that arise, the Christians have a whole Christological interpretation of the Torah.
Yeah.
So I'm saying
that. Once you start to look in
Chazal, I'm not sure that'd be his definition. I mean, the point is saying as follows. However you get around Christianity, there's a broader point. Which is to say, if you're getting about this specific source tradition, this specific tradition, ultimately, it's a reductio ad absurdum.
What does that mean?
If you reduce the argument, take it to its logical conclusion, you result in certain conclusions that are just impossible, unacceptable. And therefore, the logic must be false.
Logic leads you to like a dead end.
That logic leads you to something which is unacceptable. Reductio, I mean, if you take it,
something absurd. Their logic could be false, but their intent is clearly to be more inclusive and to not, like, you know,
show.
The Rambam and the Abarbanel are basically saying that lots of people are appropriate, and they're just trying to not say that. And irrespective of what their logic is, it's just.
So correct. But
what we just say people aren't coping because it's not nice.
No, I mean, I think it's obvious. Even if their logic, if you take it to the end of the day, might make room for the ridiculous. It ultimately.
So,
if they were sitting here right now, they would say obviously Christians are coping. They'd say that.
The question is how do you read that into them? How whether they draw that line?
You can, but.
But you've got to be able to, as you said, otherwise you've just lacked Christianity.
It's hard to believe that they would actually think that.
I believe the question is what the response would be.
Yeah.
How much does this whole discussion of God's corporeality impact by the fact that Christians believed that God once took a corporeal form? Was that, did that ever mean that there was an emphasis to not believe God had a body or something?
So this is interesting. I mean, there's no doubt that it's convenient. I mean, I don't think that, and if you read the Rambam, this is not just about Christianity. There have been those who have pointed out that argue that one of the reasons, modern day historians have argued that one of the reasons why Rambam's emphatic about this is that in order for Jews not to be in the status of demis, when they're in Islamic lands, having a much lower status, if you believe in God as some form of body, that's very problematic in the Muslims' eyes. And therefore, you might have a lower social status. Or Jews have a lower social status if Jews believe in such a thing. That might be true. I mean, it's an interesting point to mention. But not clear to me at all that's the reason why the Rambam says this. I mean, the Rambam has an integral, inherent reasons to make such an argument. By the way, Islam also had this struggle of people believing in God, having a body. The corporealism in Christianity is complex in terms of how to divide. It's not like... there is, by the way, a very interesting line. I meant to mention this earlier. I mentioned we read in 136, the Rambam says it's worse to believe in God as a body than to believe to be in a Vodazara. The Rambam's son, Avram ben Rambam, has a line somewhere where he basically says... it's no coincidence that the Christians and the political level tended to side with the anti-Maimonideans in the great Maimonidean controversies. And you know why? Because the Christians sided with those who have similar positions to them, namely the corporealists. Yeah, that's a real zinger of a line.
What does that mean when the Christians
sided,
but they also burned
Murnavochim? I'm saying they helped, they supported them, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they couldn't just burn on their own.
Do we have a more precise, like a very precise definition of what God's corporeality means? Because I feel like we haven't actually very succinctly defined it yet.
That's a good question, which leads us even into a broader question, which is, okay, God doesn't have a body. What is God?
Right.
And this is going to get us into our theory of negative theology. So Mr. Simon will start
which
us
is the
next
week,
week
God isn't.
Where the Rambam is going to tell us the answer to the question what is God is only I can tell you what God is not.
The Khazari does that as well.
Yeah. Huh?
The Khazari also goes down that
line. It's all a theory of the notion of the negative theology is a very important concept. But it takes it in its form in different places. By the way, just something to mention as well. While it's true that many other Rishonim did not believe that God had corporeality, Sadia, Khuzari, others who might be, many of them did interpret differently some of the passages of the Rambam that says we just understand allegorically, metaphorically. For example, the Rambam just basically says all these images are just images that people see in their prophecy. Right? Whereas Rav Sadia Gaon has this notion of a created glory. Okay? Where basically sometimes God creates something physical in order to serve as a physical verification for the prophet to know that he's having a prophecy, prophetic vision. Which I'll explain in certain passages in the Torah. The Yehuda Levi, the Khuzari, has this notion of an inner eye, where it's something which is found in both in prophets and in Chazal, where because of their supreme piety and intellect, that combination of their intellect and imaginative faculties lets them see into the inner essence of certain things, this inner eye, and therefore they can see certain images. Okay, now, again, none of that is, believe in God's corporeality, but it is clear that many others believe in some form of supernatural creations, if you will, which is important.
I mean, certainly everyone agrees that at some point that there are miracles that were supernatural.
No, miracles are different. Miracles are different. This is something else. There's simple interpretation. Okay. I wrote about this, by the way, corporeality in this past week's Jerusalem Post, for those interested. One of the things, just as we finish up God's corporeality, is something interesting. I always ask myself, why is it a guy people want to believe in God's corporeality?
Easier to associate with.
No, so to say the easier to associate, what do you mean by that? Meaning?
Personal.
Huh?
Becomes much personal.
Yeah, so
it's very hard to understand.
This, I think, is correct. Meaning the Rambam tells you the reason why the Torah does this is simply as a pedagogical tool. But in the 20th century, a lot of people discuss this element. I'm not saying only 20th century. But like Franz Rosenzweig writes about this, or Rabbi Eliezer Berkowitz writes about this. That the reason why there has to be anthropomorphism isn't just pedagogical, it's existential. Meaning we need to know that God cares and God's involved with our lives. Okay? Now think about this very carefully. Aleph, Kobe, think about this very carefully for a moment. The existential claim that Rosenzweig and Berkowitz are making, is basically saying, listen, the Torah describes a religious encounter in a manner which makes it very real. Now, one of the things we have to ask as we go through the Rambam is, does the Rambam believe in such an existential encounter with God? Or does the Rambam simply feel God is distant, and that's what God is? Okay? Keep that in the back of your mind as you go forward. Because There are all sorts of existentialists I want to talk about, and the question is whether the Rambam buys this existential argument.
But surely, by creating Yom Suf, you already have this kind of this realization, even without the physical, even without needing to enter into the realms of corporeal reality.
So all of you are asking kashas, well, very good kashas, based on what we're going to know now, what we're going to see, because you know a little bit of negative theology. So then the question becomes is, well, how do you understand God's intervention in the world? Through creation, prophecy, miracles, all that good stuff. And that's going to be precisely the problem. If you make God to be so distant and so hard to understand, how is it that he's intervening in the world? We're not there yet. We're not there yet. Okay, so if you can, take a look next time in 149. I think we'll talk a little about angels in 149 next time. And then start taking a look at the negative theology in 150 and 151 and onwards. I don't know, do 149, do 150, do 151. Maybe the 152, 153, I don't know. See the stuff there. 155 is important. 156. 57 is good. 58. I'm trying to cover sort of 149 to 158 in the coming weeks. I'm not sure how long it's going to take.
Two questions. First of all, when you mentioned that there could have been different opinions within Chazal.